with Dr. Keith Suter.
As the US presidential election approaches, it's just days away, November 5. Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump are in a tightly contested race. Recent national polls indicate a narrow lead for Kamala Harris, showing her ahead by approximately 1.5 percentage points. However, other polls have Donald Trump leading by 0.4 percentage points, highlighting the race's volatility. In key background states, the competition remains intense. In Michigan, for example, Kamala Harris leads by 2 percentage points, which is within the margin of error. Wisconsin, Harris holds a 1-point lead. In Pennsylvania, Donald Trump has a slight advantage. In Georgia and North Carolina, both candidates are virtually tied. Both candidates have intensified their campaigns in critical regions. I mean, they've all been out and about telling anyone who will listen how bad the other person is. I know, it's really got to that stage, though, hasn't it? It's been a campaign of bad-mouthing each other. And both sides are guilty. So, what about the policies? Have people wanted to know about the policies? Because surely the policies have got lost in all the trashing. Well, on the economy, Harris proposes rolling back Trump's tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans, enacting a minimum tax for billionaires, and increasing the tax rate on long-term capital gains to 28% for those earning at least $1 million annually. Donald Trump on taxes and the economy advocates for lowering the corporate income tax rate to 15% from 21%. And implementing a broad 10% tariff on imported goods. On climate change, Kamala Harris supports the Inflation Reduction Act. It aims to balance fossil fuel use with green energy initiatives. Donald Trump plans to reverse green energy subsidies and mandates introduced during the Biden administration. Foreign policy. Harris advocates for a ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas conflict and emphasizes humanitarian concerns. According to Donald Trump, he'll solve all the wars. He criticizes Kamala Harris' calls for a ceasefire and emphasizes strong support for Israel. And so it goes. And so it goes. I thought to have a chat about it, because it's only days away, we would talk to Dr. Keith Suter. Good morning, Dr. Keith. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks, Brent.
Boy, oh boy, it's just days away. At this point, leading into the election, Keith, did you think it would still be as close as the polls are telling us it is?
Well, the pollsters are very cautious now because they've had their fingers badly burned on previous occasions. So they're now refusing to make any predictions about the winner next week. But one person who has been making predictions, and he's been getting the predictions right for the last 40 years, is an American academic called Professor Alan Lichtman. He doesn't look at opinion polls at all. He has his own set of criteria, and he says it'll be Kamala Harris who wins, and he keeps reaffirming that prediction.
So he keeps reaffirming that he believes Kamala Harris will win?
Yep.
Okay.
On the state of the economy and other issues like that, not the opinion polls. He has no interest in opinion polls.
How do you think Kamala Harris's historic candidacy as the first black and South Asian woman to run for president will influence voter turnout?
Well, that's certainly been a big issue. And I think that if she loses, there'll be a search for scapegoats. And one of the scapegoats will be young black men. Young black women are fine, but young black men, I think, might be blamed partly for her loss. They are having difficulty, obviously, voting for a black woman, ironically. They have a different attitude towards women, the argument runs, and also perhaps Arab Americans who will just boycott the vote. They're not going to vote for Trump, but they're not going to vote for her either because of the government's policy towards the Middle East. So there's already a search for scapegoats underway. On the other side, Trump is already planting seeds to start challenging the election result. It's got to be an overwhelming victory by one side or the other. Otherwise, we will see this dragged out through the courts throughout the rest of this month into December and possibly even into January. Could I just highlight for our listeners that there is a two-stage process that is underway. Nothing to do with Trump. This is simply the way that the voting system operates. In the United States, small rural areas, easy to count, tend to vote Republican. So you get what is called the red mirage, because red is the color of the Republican Party. And then as the night wears on and you get the votes from the big cities like New York and San Francisco and elsewhere, then you get the blue wave setting in. Now, 4 years ago, Donald Trump was fooled by that red mirage, declared victory, and said the whole game was over. And then, of course, as the blue wave set in, Trump started to claim that the election had been stolen, and he still makes that claim 4 years later. And that's the process that people need to look out for next week, this two-stage evolution. And sometimes the blue wave does overcome the red mirage, but sometimes, as with George W. Bush, for example, or Donald Trump 8 years ago, it is possible that the Republican candidate gets elected.
Keith, in the 2020 presidential election, approximately 66.8% of eligible voters cast ballots, and that marked the highest turnout in the 21st century. As of yesterday, over 67 million Americans have already voted in the current election, surpassing early voting numbers from previous years. So this indicates a significant portion of the electorate has participated ahead of Election Day. What does that mean?
And you've got to hand it to Donald Trump. He makes politics interesting.
But what do you think that means?
This is the Trump factor in politics. And as somebody who teaches political science, this is what you notice in your classrooms. He has made politics interesting in America, for good or ill.
So do you think that people are just wanting to have their say and get it out of the way? Or has Trump motivated people in larger numbers than ever before to actually want to have their say rather than not be bothered?
Oh, absolutely. And it's a very polarized culture in the United States at the moment. And I'm getting comments from Americans who are saying they can't even raise this matter in family discussions because families are being divided over this. So it's a very polarized situation indeed. And so what we're seeing then is this record turnout for both sides, both Democrats and Republicans, of people wanting to vote. Remember, the Australian electoral system with compulsory voting, compulsory registration, etc., is world's best practice. Everybody talks about the Australian system. We are the ideal voting system. We still end up with duds getting elected to Parliament, but we are the top system for having elections in terms of voter turnout and all the rest. In the United States, it's completely chaotic. It's on a county-to-county basis or state-to-state basis. It's written into the Constitution that the central government in Washington does not control elections, very different from what we have in Canberra. And so you get all these local variations. A major part is trying to get people banned from voting, finding reasons why they could not vote, a prison record, etc. And so it's a really chaotic system. And so people are wanting to vote early because they know that there will be queues on the day. And so they're getting in early now to try to avoid having to stand out in the cold weather for a few hours, perhaps, depending on where they are. So it's a very primitive system in the United States compared with our system. You cannot understand the American voting system while you only know of the Australian system. The American system is one of the world's worst in the developed world.
The last time we had a presidential election without a Biden, a Bush, or a Clinton on the ballot was in 1976, almost 50 years ago. Since then, one of those names has been on every ballot, showing how important name recognition is, especially with voluntary voting. Of course, we didn't include Obama in that. Now we have candidates like Harris and Waltz, and the election's only a few days away. Harris is the first candidate since 1968 who hasn't gone through a primary, which is usually how candidates get introduced to, A, the American public. In the primary system, millions of people vote, and candidates spend a lot of money, millions and millions and millions, on their campaign, so voters get to know them. Since Harris and Waltz didn't go through that process, she's unfamiliar, Keith, is she not? Her name is unfamiliar, both names are unfamiliar, to more people in America than you might expect.
That's right, because you've got a low level of voter engagement. You know, for people who love their politics, like you and me, Brim, you know, we're well across to what she stands for, etc. But there are many people who would just be thinking about how to vote quite closer to that November 5 deadline. So there's a low level of voter engagement. People have got many other worries besides just voting. You know, they've got mortgages to pay, there's a high cost of living, etc. And so they don't necessarily have that sort of political engagement. And of course, the other issue is the way in which, as you say, she got parachuted in the biggest change we've had since 1968, which I lived through. And in 1968, Lyndon Johnson decided not to run for re-election. He did that quite early on in the piece, in March of that year. And that, of course, generated all sorts of confusion, as well as, of course, you had the assassination of Robert Kennedy, father of the current Robert Kennedy, who had Martin Luther King. It was and of course, race riots throughout the United States. It was a really turbulent year. And then in the end, Hubert Humphrey just marginally lost the vote. So that was a very turbulent year. So those of us with long memories, the dinosaurs can remember an earlier occasion on which we've had a lot of chaos. And I think we're just going through that at the moment again.
On the subject of abortion, now abortion is a major issue this election and is motivating both sides. Kamala Harris supports the right to abortion and wants to make it a national law. She also wants to improve access to reproductive health, especially for underserved areas. Her position appeals to progressives and women's rights groups, but might turn off some moderate voters in key states. The flip side, Donald Trump is against abortion and thinks states should decide their own rules. He helped appoint judges who overturned Roe v. Wade and backs strict abortion limits. This view pleases his conservative and religious supporters, but could push away moderate voters, especially women in swing votes. Keith, my question to you is, how do you think this will focus, how will the focus on abortion affect turnout among women and young voters, and could it change the outcome in contested swing states?
Oh, absolutely. It's certainly an issue that's playing on the minds of people. And of those people who have voted early, 60% of them have been women. So the women are certainly coming out to vote. And a motivating reason is obviously this whole issue of reproductive health. So it certainly has maybe an election winner for Kamala Harris. Trump now says he's opposed to abortion. He's a New York liberal, small L liberal. But he's had to pretend to be on the far right in order to attract the religious conservatives.
How much influence has social media, particularly platforms like X, formerly Twitter, TikTok, had on younger voters? And do you think it could shift the election outcome?
Well, social media is certainly very important. We saw that with Barack Obama, who did a brilliant job in mobilizing social media to attract younger voters. And the social media will also be very important one way or another. We're already getting allegations of Russian interference with Russian fake videos being shown on social media. So there's plenty of scope for misleading voters, unfortunately, with social media.
Okay, I'm going to get you to look into your crystal ball. Who do you think will win the election? And will we have a result by the end of the week?
Well, on the first one, I'm following Professor Adam Lichtman, who's got it right for the last 40 years, and he's predicting a Kamala Harris victory. On the second issue, will we get a result by the end of the week? I am not sure. If it's a close-run thing, the lawyers on both sides will be out and making a lot of money contesting the votes. So we may not know for sure by the end of this week, or perhaps even by the end of this month, if it's a close-run thing. So what we need is for one side or the other to win by a really big majority so that it can't be challenged. If it's only a small slice, which is what the opinion polls are suggesting, then we can see litigation and lawyers running on for days, weeks, and the courts are already having to work out how they're going to handle legal challenges. Will it go, for example, to the US Supreme Court, which happened in the year 2000, which gave the result to George W. Bush, George Bush Jr., even though results showed later that, in fact, Gore had won. What was interesting by then, by the way, is that Gore accepted defeat. We're not that sure that Trump would ever accept a defeat. He didn't last time. You know, the process is the losing candidate acknowledges defeat, rings the winning candidate. The winning candidate then steps forward to declare victory. Trump refused to do that and continues to refuse to do it for the last election. What's going to happen this time round? Will there be lots of litigation? It's got to be an overwhelming victory. Even if Trump doesn't accept it, the commentariat you know, the journalists, etc., will accept an overwhelming victory and reduce the risk of it going to litigation. Otherwise, some people are talking about it being run into January even.
Gosh, it's always good to catch up with you, Dr. Keith Suter. Thank you for your time. And maybe we can book in for the same time, same channel next Saturday and talk about, well, do we have or don't we have a result?
Absolutely. Thanks, Brent.
Thank you, Keith.